Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is Monday, August 25th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Building a Worldview Through Primetime Television, Session 1 of Reading TV for Social and Theological Meaning, presented by Chris Voss Rothmeyer. Number VOK 2003-06. Let's listen in.
An impressive crowd. If you thought that you were coming here to talk about Monday Night Football, I wrote the wrong descriptor. Actually, it was an example of the kind of TV we're going to be talking about tonight. The type of TV that John Dominic Crossan calls myth, or anybody calls myth, but I'll say for the audience sometime 10 years from now, my name is Chris Voss Rothmeyer, and I am a pastor in Portland, Oregon. The subject of my five-week series is Theology, Culture, and Primetime Television.
I'm sorry? You said your five-week series.
Did I say 5 weeks?
Yeah.
Yes.
I will not be here that long. Snow flies and I'm gone. So we'll be looking at, over the next 5 days, different categories of television. And what I want to help equip you to do is to read television for social and theological meaning. Crossan, in a book called A Dark Interval Towards a Theology of Story, categorizes different types of television. Today we'll be looking at myth. Tomorrow we'll be looking at an example of apology or apologue. Wednesday we'll be looking at action, specifically focusing on an episode of ER. Tuesday, we'll be looking at, getting back to Tuesday, apologue. An example of that is nightly news. So we'll be looking at a nightly news clip. And then Thursday, we'll be looking at satire with an emphasis on The Simpsons. And Friday, we'll be looking at the most unusual and difficult to find type of programming called parable. And I found it in a public service announcement, commercial. Can probably also find it in The Twilight Zone. There are a number of other shows. But Monday Night Football got into the announcement tonight because it actually is an example of myth. And by that I mean it's world building. It helps us, it builds an understanding of our world. It constructs a particular understanding. That's what myth does. Parable is at the exact opposite end of the spectrum. It takes the understanding of the world that you have and completely tears it down, seeks to reconstruct it, or deconstruct it, I should say. So what the kind of format that we're going to be using today is you'll be watching some clips, about an 11, 12, 13-minute long clip of a Star Trek episode from Star Trek Voyager. While that series isn't currently running, Enterprise is running, and there are perpetual reruns of the Voyager series. You can watch them any time of day and night. So I thought it was relevant enough for our conversation. And Star Trek actually does have, over time, this mythological trajectory. So welcome, and let's get started. A little background. Why am I doing primetime television? It's because primetime TV is the most watched time period of television. There's a great book in the bookstore called Bowling Alone, and many of you may have read it. It's a terrific book, brings up some statistical information that might be of interest to you. Beginning here, most studies estimate that the average American citizen now watches roughly 4 hours of television per day. That's watches. That's not having the television on. That's actually physically watching the television. Very nearly the highest viewership anywhere in the world. Between 1965 and 1995, we gained an average of 6 hours a week in added leisure time. And we spent almost all six of those hours, additional hours, watching television. So it's pervasive in our culture. There's a nifty graph in here that indicates there was this study done by, a series of studies done by D.D.B. Needham Lifestyle. Don't ask me. from 1993 to 1998, and they asked people to quantify when they watch television throughout the course of the day. They gave 10 options. You watch it in the, let's see, wake up, breakfast, morning, lunch, early afternoon, late afternoon, before dinner, dinner, after dinner, and go to bed. When do you think the most watched time is?
After dinner?
Indeed. After dinner is the most watched time. But very shortly followed by before dinner, and a whole bunch of people watch television during dinner and just before they go to bed. So primetime television has earned its name. After work, during every period of the day, at least one quarter of all adults report some TV viewing. After work, this fraction rises to more than half, peaking at 86% during the aptly named primetime hours. Roughly half of all Americans, married and single, parents and childless, report watching television while eating dinner. So if you watch television while you're eating dinner, you're in the majority, or at least in the median. So that's why I thought it was so important to do kind of the subtext of this series of classes is called Media Literacy. And I don't necessarily like or even watch all the shows that we're going to be talking about this week, but they're examples of things that we see throughout our television viewing week. Star Trek is an example of myth. It builds a world understanding. A little background about Star Trek. Actually, I did pick the show because I like it and I watch it all the time. I am a Trekkie. The first series began in 1966 and ran until 1968. It takes place in the 23rd century. Spock, Captain Kirk, all those characters. Very important to note that it took place in the midst of the Vietnam War, and it's important to understand about how that show came about. The second series, The Next Generation, began in 84 and finished off its season in 93, I believe, so almost 10 years, quite a bit longer than the first one, which got canceled, by the way, because the ratings weren't high enough. The third series, Deep Space Nine, began in the mid-90s and ended in the late 90s, about 5 or 6 years in the run. Fourth series, Star Trek Voyager, an episode from which we'll watch tonight, started in the mid-90s and ended in the year 2000. And then the fifth series, which currently is running, and which takes place, interestingly, anachronistically, before the original, it takes place before the 23rd century, before Captain Kirk and Spock and all of them. They're still working out the Prime Directive. It started in 2001, and it continues on. 10 movies have been spawned, and others are sure to come out for millennia to come. So, Star Trek was originally a polemic against the Vietnam War, created by Gene Roddenberry, of course, who died when the second series was in the works, and Deep Space Nine, they kind of overlapped. Here, I have a definition of the Prime Directive, if you ever wanted to know. It's also known as Starfleet General Order Number 1. There are several general orders, but this is as the Prime Directive reads. And imagine if we're in the midst of the Vietnam War, how this would sound to you. Starfleet personnel and spacecraft are prohibited from interfering in the normal development of any society, and that any Starfleet vessel or crew member is expendable to prevent violation of this rule. So, safe to say that Gene Roddenberry was not in favor of our involvement in Vietnam. But we're not always involved in war. We haven't constantly been involved in war since the mid-60s. So as Star Trek has continued, its Prime Directive remains, but it has had a different view of our relationship to the rest of the world. The title of the episode that we're going to watch in a few minutes is called Star Trek Voyager, Blink of an Eye. And actually, it is taken from Psalm 90. Not the phrase blink of an eye, but you'll recognize the overtone here. Psalm 90, verse 4. For thousands of years in your sight, O God, are like a day that has just gone by, or a watch in the night. Maybe what we'll just do is watch the thing. And then This is a big crowd, actually. I'm delighted. I'm sorry if you're, I'm disappointed, if you're disappointed that we're not going to be talking about Monday Night Football tonight. But the way I'd like to do this class after we watch this episode is to break up into smaller groups and have you talk about certain aspects of this. We're going to be looking at this episode through certain lenses. There's a narrative lens, a structural lens. We'll be looking for something called signs and messages, power and ideology, and then we'll look at it through a theological lens. And so I need 5 groups to be formed. Well, why don't you go ahead and do that now so that we don't have to break up? Why don't you form generally, it doesn't matter the size of the groups, but I need to have 5 groups, and you're each going to look, as you watch the episode, you're going to look for certain things. So why don't you go ahead and do that now?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So this is what I'd like you to do. I'll go over the questions, and I'll explain if you have questions. But each group is going to watch for a certain thing. You'll talk about it after seeing the episode within your small group, and then we'll talk about it in a larger group. But first, how about the group over here with this sheet of paper? You'll look at the narrative. Did you really want to look at their narrative lens?
No, I just okay.
I thought we would do that. So we were the first organized, and I was bragging that we had the easy one.
We'll get a prize. We'll
take the hard one. Narrative, okay?
Sorry to tear down your world.
You're a fair organizer.
It was a myth anyway.
So the narrative elements over here. What does the introduction say about the show? And I'm going to run the introduction. And then we're going to stop it, pause it, and think about it a little bit, looking at it. Who are the protagonists? What are their motivations? And then who are the antagonists? What are their motivations? Who or what are the stereotypes? And then group 2, how about the group in the back in the corner? Oh, sure, how about that group? You look at lens 2, the structure. What is the dominant message of the episode? What's the point? What non-resolvable contradictions are explored in this episode? That one I'm not going to emphasize so much, but the second two I'd like to. How does this episode build a particular view of life, which I'm contending this episode in Star Trek in general does very well, but not all episodes fit into their neat little category. That's kind of the way life is. Sometimes a mythical episode will extend into apologue or might even extend a little bit into action. But what I mean by apologue is how does it support an already existing view of life, whereas myth is building a view of life. You kind of get the difference? Okay. Lens 3, signs and messages. That's over here. Thank you, Joan and everybody. Describe how the camera is used to tell the story. Maybe looking at the angles, the speed of the action, that kind of thing. Or more that I haven't thought of yet. What special effects are used and how do they contribute to the story? What signs are used to convey major messages? And this is probably one of the more challenging things to think about, but I'll just kind of prime the pump. What music is being portrayed here and what does that say? Actually, the signs are music, maybe the uniforms that are being worn, the ship, what is the ship? Physical appearance of the characters. Chakotay's got this design on his face. What does that convey? And then the next question, what messages are conveyed by those signs? What messages conveyed by the music, by the uniforms, by the sign on Chakotay's face, and that kind of thing? the high-tech sounds. There's all kinds of high-tech sounds throughout Star Trek. What is that telling us? Does that make sense? Okay, all right. It'll all become clear, as crystal clear as possible. Lens 4, power and ideology. Is that over here by you?
Yeah.
Okay, you've got yourselves figured out. Who were the commercial sponsors? That's a gimme. I got that listed out there for you. Who has power over whom in the narrative? And how is conflict resolved? If violent, who wins or loses? Do perpetrators suffer? The functions, I'll just kind of tell you that as we go through this. We might not get through every one of these questions, but I want to touch on two or three. And then the theological analysis. How is the human predicament presented in the story, and what is salvation for this story? And I'll just tell you that every television show that we watch, and most definitely every commercial that we watch, presents a human predicament, what our need is, and then what the salvation is, whether it's your car looks like a junk heap, you need a new SUV, that's salvation, or something on that order. What is the need being presented by Star Trek, this episode? And then how does it tell us to find happiness, to find joy, or to find God, to find human fulfillment, whatever it is? Those are going to be the two constants throughout the week. Other theological questions will vary, but what are the main characters, the desires of the characters? Who changes? How? In response to what? When and where does transcendence, that is getting outside of yourself, occur? Does this episode portray a humanity that knows and accepts its own vulnerability? And how does this episode converge with a Christian understanding, and how does it diverge from it? Does anybody have a question about where we're going? A question about any of the questions?
Where no man has gone before.
Indeed. But it's different. Now no one has gone before.
Yeah, right.
Let me just also, before we show you this, this book is in the bookstore. It's called Watching What We Watch, written by several people, edited by generally Walt Davis, at the San Francisco Theological Seminary, my hometown. And this is it's about a 4-year-old, maybe 3-year-old book, and it's actually looking at some shows that are no longer on, like X-Files or Moesha, Seinfeld, actually. It doesn't look at Star Trek, but it does look at Nightly News, it looks at ER, it looks at advertising, and The Simpsons, actually. It looks at all of those other things. So I highly commend it to you. It's in the bookstore. I get no money from its sale. Can you grab the lights, please, and maybe close the door?
I'm curious to see where he's going to go with this, because I know this process.
It's the light switch.
It's right going over there.
Over here?
No. No,
you had
it's
right
not.
There with the wrist.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Excellent. Okay, so we're going to watch the introduction. So all of you are going to watch the introduction and just kind of think about what it's saying about the show. Is the VCR on now?
Is the green light on?
No.
No, the time's out. No.
It's blinking green and red.
Yeah.
Now it's green, now it's red.
Okay.
Green.
Okay, now
is it green? So I'm going to turn this off.
It's green and red both.
Okay, and I'm supposed to turn this on again. It's supposed to send a signal to that thing.
Right.
And hopefully it'll be on again. Let's see what
red.
Happens.
Now it's green.
We're in some kind of gravimetric gradient. It's pulling us toward the planet.
There was a light on the screen, or a picture on the screen.
Segment from the very beginning. It's, you know, you got that opening scene, and then you've got the actual introduction. So we're going to watch that first opening scene, and then we're going to watch the introduction, and I'm going to stop at the end of the introduction.
Approximately 58 revolutions per minute.
Shall we take a closer look?
That's what we're here for.
Tom, put us in a high orbit.
Aye.
Hello.
Our warp drive is all right.
Again.
Why?
Unknown.
Back us off.
Our impulse engines are responding.
Then use the auxiliary booster.
We're in some kind of gravimetric gradient. It's pulling us toward the planet. Part of here, you need to kind of watch in order to see what's happening. You need to understand.
Oh,
the very beginning.
Don't leave.
Just stay.
Just stay in here for the entire session. Push a button.
Gravimetric readings are similar to that of a collapsed dwarf star. It also resembles a quasar in that it has a high rate of rotation, approximately 58 revolutions per minute.
Shall we take a closer look?
That's what we're here for.
Tom, put us in a high orbit.
Aye.
Our warp drive is offline.
Why?
Unknown.
Back us off.
Our impulse engines are responding.
Then use the auxiliary thruster.
We're in some kind of gravimetric gradient. It's pulling us toward the planet.
For modern technology. Okay, so just looking at that first episode, the introduction, just say a few things about it. What is it going to tell you? What does it tell you about the show we're about to watch?
Entering the unknown.
Unknown, yeah.
Well, and that there are two groups of people who are going to be affected by this, the newcomers and the people who are existing on that planet.
Oh, right. That's in this particular episode. Oh. Let's stick with the introduction.
Oh, I've never seen it before. I thought maybe that was an introduction.
Okay. All right. Just the opening sequence with the ship flying around and all that kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
A lack of control.
Okay, how so?
They have a series of technologies they were depending on, and one by one they were failing.
Oh, right, in that beginning sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's stick with just that musical part, that just that beginning. We'll get back to that. Excellent point.
The lack of control with it being so small and everything else being so
okay.
Big.
Yeah, the Enterprise is a really tiny little thing.
I said the introduction shows complete control.
Yeah.
Safety.
Safety?
Yeah.
Yeah, the universe is a very calm and serene place.
Yeah. I assume that was the planet of Saturn, you know, the ring that they... Mm-hmm. There seem to be familiar formations.
Right. there's some solar flares, and that's what kind of opens us up to that Star Trek Voyager. What kind of music is it being? Does it have?
Heroic.
Hmm? Heroic?
Heroic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Majestic.
Majestic. Mm-hmm. Triumphal.
Mm-hmm. Adventurous.
Adventurous. That's a good word. Would it be the same if they had a rap music beginning? Or country music? Interestingly, the new Enterprise series doesn't have this. All the other series have this majestic, heroic sense to it. Orchestral music. The new one has kind of light rock. It's kind of an interesting change from all the rest of the episodes. Okay, how about what's the rate? What's the speed of the ship? It's slow. What's it doing?
Cruising.
Looking around.
Yeah.
That, right, it's looking around. Now that wouldn't in itself say much until you understand that the show takes place in something called the Delta Quadrant. The Milky Way is divided up into four quadrants, and they're at the far corner of the Milky Way. We're in the Alpha Quadrant. Alpha, Beta, Delta, Gamma. So they're about 44,000 light years away from where we are right now. It's like Gilligan's Island. It's a modern-day Gilligan's Island. They want to get back. They're lost in space. They want to get back. But there they are. They're just kind of cruising around, looking through clouds, and interested in exploring. And just to look at that first original episode, there, and we'll get back to this, but just take note of that conversation that Janeway, Captain Janeway and Chakotay have. She says, want to take a look? And what does Chakotay say?
That's
what we're here for. All right. We'll get back to that for sure. All right, let's watch the rest of the episode. And I apologize how it kind of jumps around. I'll do my best to fill in some of the blanks, but I can't show a whole 60-minute segment today, or I guess I should say 50 minutes. That's not accounting for commercials.
What does he want from us? And after that, we must learn the nature of this God. We must understand the reason for his arrival. You are making an offering to Tom.
I placed the fire food on his altar.
Then the ground shook. I looked up. And the new one was there.
Yeah, I got some pauses in here. I was thinking of having some conversation in between. Well, maybe not.
It should come back.
So the Pantheon IV, it produced a subspace particle field which runs between the poles. Voyager's arrival disrupted that field.
It looks like the ship's been caught in an eddy of some kind.
It's worse than that. Voyager seems to have become the planet's third pole.
The imbalance is affecting the outer crust. I picked up indications of high-frequency seismic activity.
Caused by our presence?
Possibly.
Does anybody live there?
The atmosphere is having a scattering effect on our sensors.
Is that vegetation?
According to sensors, yes.
The Tachyon core has created a space-time differential between the planet and the surrounding space. We're watching the seasons change in a matter of seconds.
For each second that passes on Voyager, nearly a day goes by on the planet.
Scan for inhabitants.
Oh, thank God.
You're late.
Oh, the hill is steep, and I'm not as young as I used to be.
More heat. There are grave matters at stake here that cannot be delayed.
Protector, what exactly are you doing?
I'm sending him a letter.
Him? Sending who, Lester?
The ground shaker. The light bringer.
Had you been more attentive to my lessons when you were a boy, you would not be so gullible as a man.
On the contrary, you taught me well. Our ignorant ancestors believed every star was a deity. You taught me how foolish that was. Superstition, you called it.
And that's exactly what it is.
Hungry?
But bad fortune to eat the fire fruit.
According to whom? Our ancestors? Don't tell me you believe that. that old superstition? Perhaps we shouldn't completely ignore the old beliefs, no matter how strange they may seem today. Ground Shaker. Isn't it possible the name was not given arbitrarily? That this star is indeed responsible for knocking down our walls and making us stumble as we walk?
Oh, yes, I heard about that, my condolences.
You heard what?
Well, that you stumbled in front of several important people during the last ground shake. Very embarrassing, I'm sure.
I did nothing of the sort.
Well, my hearing is not as good as it used to be, nor my memory either. What were we talking about?
We were talking about ancient superstitions. Now, I don't believe for a moment that the stars are gods, but then, what are they?
A great mystery to which there is no answer.
I believe the sky is full of people, just like ourselves.
Oh, nonsense.
Prove me wrong. I say each star encompasses a city, and the ground shaker rules one of these cities, a fellow protector. If I'm correct, then he'll listen to me. One protector to another. Your pen.
Any response to our transmission?
No.
No visual change either.
Surprised? The entire sequence? How about just the prime numbers?
You're tired.
So are you.
The prime numbers and the elemental constants. Then we'll stop.
An acceptable compromise. It's not as if they're going anywhere. If they even exist in the first place.
Do you doubt that?
I doubt everything.
So you weren't one of those children that had the entire series of Skyship friends.
Actually, I had them all, even the duplicates. You couldn't walk into my home without tripping over a friend or two.
Not in our home. My grandfather wouldn't allow it. He told us that the Skyship was a palace where an evil protector lived. He said that bad children were sent there to be punished. At this point, I'd be happy to see anything. Evil or not.
Can you boost the signal? We're already at maximum. Maybe if we switch to a different carrier weight. If there is somebody up there, they don't like us very much.
Any beings capable of building that skyship could have destroyed our world long ago. They're not causing the tremors on purpose.
What if they're all dead?
If you truly believe that, why did you join this project?
Well, I doubt everything, remember? Even my own doubts. I hope someone's up there.
So do I.
Now they're going to show up.